Hello, everybody. This is Patrick from The Fundamental Principle. I hope everybody has liked the last few episodes. Our 421 and our one on Pope Francis. Our email is available. If you have any comments, questions, concerns about any of that, please contact us. I'm going to do Catholic and Identitarian today. Always open with a prayer. In the name of the Father, Son, Holy Spirit. Soul of Christ, sanctify us. Body of Christ, save us. Blood of Christ, inebriate us. Water from Christ's side, wash us. Passion of Christ, strengthen us. O good Jesus, hear us. Within thy wounds, hide us. Suffer us not to be separated from thee. Amen. The word of the Pope manipulated by the media. Media coverage of papal statements was biased and dishonest, focused on exclusively on everything that seemed to agree with the liberals' take on immigration, trying to hide certain parts of his speech. The media concealed from us that Pope Francis had also asked that welcoming immigrants be thoughtful and carried out in accordance with the common good of the countries concerned. Only you have to read the speech in a European Parliament on the 25th of November 2014, where he called for the European Union propose with clarity its own cultural identity, respect the rights of European citizens, and to guarantee the welcome of migrants. The Holy Father also said that it was necessary to act on the cause and not only on the effects. Fair, courageous, and concrete policies in a socio-political development in the countries of immigration and in the resolution of international conflicts. He also recognized the terrorist risk associated with taking in immigrants. Only 400 kilometers from Sicily, there is an unbelievably cruel terrorist group. There is a danger of infiltration. It's true. In January 2016, Pope Francis called on governments to be wise, inviting them to evaluate with wisdom and foresight the degree to which their country would have offered a decent life to immigrants. So my biggest concern with Pope Francis is that he was not as vocal as he could have been. A lot of his issues could have been clarified. He could have doubled down on things. He could have... A lot of it, the controversy around him was met with silence from him and didn't offer any clarity for whatever reason. And that definitely is caused scandal. Caused a lot of scandal. Caused a lot of people to fall into sin. Be it with... hopelessness or doubt in the true faith, or people leaving to orthodoxy, a position of balance. For all that, is the Pope really a victim of a conspiracy of bad faith? Yes and no. For as poorly informed as they are, the media make do with what they're given. I don't know if they're poorly informed, is that they're purposely malicious. If the words are ambiguous, they will be deformed in one's sense or another, often in the least beneficial way to their speaker. Of course, the media belong to the global political finance power that is a hostile to the church, and even the most balanced position can be transformed and phrased, taken out of their context. But when the dish is offered to the journalist on a platter, you shouldn't be surprised, like a frightened maiden, that they seize it with both hands. As tenuous as they are, media concessions are daunting. Quote, never concede the doctrine of the church, unquote, written by St. Joseph Murray Esceva. Quote, for when an alloy is made, it is always better metal than losses, unquote. While the Pope has suggested limits on welcoming migrants, he has only given it lip service. He isn't it his speech contradictory when he asks the heads of state to develop their capacity to integrate all that wish capacity to integrate all the while wishing that migrants do not feel their cultural identity threatened? Has he not created ambiguity in confusing refugees with migrants, two terms which cover from different situations? Has he not been impromptly appealed to emotion and more often in favor of illegal immigrants rather than those who pay the price for accepting the migrants, though no one should ever ask if the latter wanted to do so? He who has criticized the globalization of indifference so much concerning the migrant deaths in the Mediterranean, has he not shown an indifference toward the victim of crimes committed by illegal immigrants? Finally, doesn't his appeal to generously invoke a certain disdain for Europeans as well as a kind of preference for the migrants? I mean, he could have said this. I'm not saying he didn't, but clearly he didn't say anything loud enough. All the Christmas attacks on Germany from Turks or Arabs, Christmas is the second biggest holiday, second most important season, I would say, Lent, Easter, primary, for Christians in Europe, but not a word from the pontiff or no action done in any meaningful sort of way. Or even we can bring things home and we can bring things home with the Waukesha parade attack. Was it would be 4 years ago this November? Darryl Brooks running his van into a crowd of people. Nothing was said. I mean, sure, it was a crazy black eye, but still, nothing was condemned. Nothing said from the Vatican or said by the local bishop. Nothing meaningfully done. A point of balance. Is the Pope really a victim of? The incomprehensible silence of the Pope on European suffering, considering how preoccupied Pope Francis is with the migrant crisis, surely the Pope could not have ignored the chaos left in the wake of illegal immigrants, wherever they go, like the clashes of Lesbos, Greece's own Lampedusa, with the image of native Greek inhabitants in tears, frightened by the newly arrived migrants, 20,000 migrants on an island of 86,000 inhabitants, a boat of illegal migrants arrives every 10 minutes from Lesbos. That's close to Springfield numbers. So I've heard from down Grapevine or people posting about Springfield that a lot of the migrants are leaving due to some of Trump's actions, that their status is being taken away, and that I think they're moving to Columbus, though, which is the San Francisco of the Midwest, so I've heard. So I don't know. I pray for the people of Springfield. I hope they can their lives get enriched again without their pets being eaten or voodoo being done in their town. Who knows what terrible spirits they brought into the town. A boat of illegal migrants arrives every 10 minutes from Lesbos. In the videos of the clashes, one sees large crowds invading the streets, fighting on foot of houses and buildings, and local residents trying to push back both good and bad. In a town of Sid in Siberia on the border of Croatia, illegal migrants set up in a Christian cemetery. They sleep on the tombs and refuse piles. They sleep in the tombs and refuse piles up on the paths between. Even more dramatic, in Sweden, a family welcomed in a illegal Eridian into their homes. In return, he slaughters their 7-year-old daughter. In Germany, according to the Gladstone Institute, there is a real epidemic of rape. Many young women housed in the reception centers are raped or pimped out, and a growing number of German women in cities across the country are raped by the asylum seekers. Many crimes are minimalized by German authorities and national media, apparently to avoid fueling anti-immigration feelings. In Saxony, in Chemnitz, a young girl of 7 was raped by an illegal immigrant in a park dedicated to the victims of fascism. What more dramatic image could there be for the total failure of anti-racist ideology? In Italy, a female No Borders activist was raped by an illegal immigrant in the Ventimiglia camp and then forced to be quiet so she not to hurt the cause. In Stockholm, a young Swedish woman of 23 was badly injured by an illegal North African migrant who raped her for several hours. In Gillingham, in the South England of France, an 18-year-old was raped by 5 young Syrian migrants in the care of the establishment where they were housed on New Year's Eve 2015. In Cologne, an illegal immigrants partied on New Year's Eve of 2015 in Cologne. Illegal immigrants partied. In one video in particular, you can see them firing handguns into the air and shooting fireworks in all directions. More than 1,000 illegal immigrants surrounded women in the train station and in the court of the cathedral. They committed burglaries and sexual assaults, enriching their prey to prevent police and firemen from interfering. Encircling their prey to prevent police and firemen from intervening, and mourns the pity for several dozen victims. The game is called Tarasha, in fashion in Arab countries. Several days after the rapes of Cologne, about 500 complaints were filed, of which 40% were sexual assaults. According to the police, they had photocopied documents with them, visa permits for asylum seekers in their pockets. They found pieces of paper with rudimentary German, enough to communicate, quote, come here, open your legs, I want to fuck, slut, I want to kill you, unquote. A curious list of priorities for so-called refugees. During the same night, other thefts and sexual assaults took place in Dusseldorf and Frankfurt and in Bielefeld, where 500 illegal immigrants invaded a nightclub, but also in Zurich, Switzerland, and in Helsinki, Finland, in the Finnish capital. As in Cologne, over 1,000 migrants were implicated in these concerted attacks. Why did it take nearly a week for the media to talk about this when an immigrant is a victim of police brutality? The story runs in a non-stop loop on the news channels. France is not immune either. In September 2015, an attempted rape took place in Menton near the Italian border. He was, quote, like an animal, unquote, the victim testified, and the list goes on and on. These acts in particular, those of New Year's Eve, are raids like those of the Saracens practiced along the Mediterranean coast of Europe until the 19th century. The last time German women were raped en masse was by the Red Army towards the end of the Second World War. It was a toll of the war, and that has a name, sexual terrorism. These acts are a declaration of war. Why has the Pope never uttered a word for these victims? Pope Francis is more than ever a Pope of images and gestures. He knows the media impact of a good phrase, a good word. The Pope likes to disarm his interlocutors, not to detract from him, not to detract from his refreshing spontaneity, but we have to recognize that he's a good customer, as they say in the trade. Consequently, to persist in believing that he is simply poor understood by the media demonstrates at best a lack of reflection and at worst bad faith. Like I said earlier, you know, his refuse, I don't know, being an old impotent man, that he refused to comment on things or to not rock the boat. You know, clearly he's failed a lot of people in his duties to, I mean, his only job is to get people to heaven and to navigate modern times and keep things spiritually true. Maybe that's his only job. I'm not, you know, I don't, you know, whatever. I think I'm, if whatever I say about Pope Francis isn't going to change your mind now that he's passed. I just hope the next pontiff isn't as, or is a little bit more vocal. The Pope isn't always right. It is impossible to defend all the positions taken by Pope Francis simply because he's the Vicar of Christ. He is also a man. Papal infallibility defined in 1970 at the First Vatican Council only concerns the pontiff's teachings when under his supreme apostolic authority. As successor to Peter, the chief of the apostles, he explicitly defines the doctrine of the church and matters of faith, morality, as they should be held to all the faithful. The Pope is not infallible when he discusses social questions, even though we should not be indifferent to the political words of the Pope, neither should we accept them blindly. We have a duty to keep certain distance, a capacity for discernment within the bounds of the respect and affection that we owe the Holy Father. We can, with prudence, criticize the political speech of Pope Francis if it hurts the common good. Yeah, common good above all. I think that needs to be the model going forward. But I think a lot of people just don't have the ability to engage with reason or rationality. It's they solely base themselves on appeal to authority, which is fine. I think it's good and bad. It's good when good people are in charge and people just get along to go along, and it's bad obviously now that people, just mobs of people that will believe whatever they're told by either media or you know, scientists or professionals, and they don't have like the cognitive dissonance, and they just like brush it off because it's, they simply can't engage with anything other than authority. European bishops who are resisting the migrant tsunami. Several bishops of Eastern Europe are resisting the tsunami, like Monsignor Laszlo Kiss Ringo, the bishop of Szeged in the south of Hungary. His diocese is an important transit place for tens of thousands of illegal immigrants. In September 2015, he had no fear of saying, quote, "These are not refugees, it's an invasion. They come here crying, Allahu Akbar. Most of them have a very arrogant and cynical way," unquote. By specifying that Christian aid must first go to the needy, the bishop of brings the requirement for truth back into the question of Christian clarity, and invites Christians to ask themselves to all the illegal immigrants need to be welcomed in Europe. Do we not have other mysteries closer to home to care for? Cardinal Antonio Canaris, Archbishop of Valencia, asked himself, quote, "Are refugees coming because they were really persecuted? Are they really entirely trustworthy? We need to be clear and not let everybody enter, because today this might be someone who behaves well, but in fact is a Trojan horse for European societies," unquote. Monsignor Henrik Hoser, Bishop of the Warsaw Praga in Poland, falls along the lines of his fellow bishops from Hungary and Spain. Quote, "Europe is currently experiencing a period similar to that of the High Middle Ages, when nomadic people swept through here coming from Asia. Monsignor Scheiner, a bishop of Kazakhstan, but of German origin. That is not an accident. Quote, the current flux of non-European people corresponding to an ideological project aimed to making the Christian man over time disappear from Europe, unquote. The courage of Cardinal Burke and Cardinal Sarah, other dissonant voices are making themselves heard in the church, like that of Cardinal Raymond Burke and the former prefect of the Supreme Tribunal of the Apostolic Signature and current head of the Order of Malta. In November of 2015, he defended that the migratory crisis translate to a, quote, a desire to repopulate Western nations with people from the Middle East. This wave of migrants can represent a real danger for Christians, unquote. Monsignor Burke uses the word repopulate quite correctly, for it certainly refers to the colonization of Europe and the ultimate conquest, the Great Replacement. Such words from the mouth of a prince of the church should not leave us indifferent. Cardinal Sarah, perfect of the Congregation for Divine Worship and Discipline of the Sacraments, is originally from Genoa. In November 2016, he said, quote, you are being invaded anyway by other cultures, other peoples who will gradually dominate you in number and completely change your culture, your convictions, your values, unquote. By the verb invade, from the word invasion and the expression dominate in number, Monsignor Sarah is clearly describing the phenomenon of the Great Replacement, the Eastern Fathers on Christian hemorrhage. You hear the same bells tolling in the East, whereas the West obsession with accepting migrants is far more convincing. Those with a first-hand knowledge, Monsignor Jacob Benin Hindo, the Syrian Catholic Archbishop of the Diocese of Hasaki Nisibi between Syria and Turkey, the Pope's call in a, quote, new invasion to leave, quote, a new invitation to leave. The people who flee war have homes, tradition, language, unquote. They have a country. They don't need to be in another one. Cardinal Bashira Baros Rahe, the Maronite Patriarch of Antioch, calls on Europe to close its borders. Quote, you must turn the faucet off and ensure the Muslims and Christians return to their lands, unquote. Father Henry Blard of Egypt, Egyptian Jesuit, quote, to take these people into your home, as Pope Francis is inviting you to do, is only palliative, a temporary solution, and unrealistically, unquote. According to Monsignor Jean Barth, the Greek Melkite Catholic Archbishop of Aleppo, Syria, emigration is far worse than war. Quote, I have suffered because of the death of a large number of people, but for me, as a shepherd of the church who lives and embodies the church, the greatest suffering is to see the church disappear. We ask who can help us stop this hemorrhage. If everyone leaves, who is going to rebuild this country? The world, the word deportation may be strong, but corresponds to reality, unquote. Brother Afirm Azir of Iraqi Dominican complains that, quote, what the West is proposing today is completely stupid and naive. Now is not the time to encourage my people to leave their country. This country is ours. It is not that of Islam, unquote. Father Fidi Jar, a Greek Melkite Catholic priest from Aleppo, even calls this, quote, a betrayal on parts of the Western Church, unquote. Another priest in Aleppo, Father George Fattel, a Salesian, refuses the false Western generosity. Quote, this land is also ours and we intend to stay here. Leave Syrians alone. We know better than anyone what kind of future we want, unquote. The current politics of openness at the origin of a powerful appeal threatens to erase Eastern Christianity. It is not charity. It's a participation in an ongoing genocide in Eastern countries, a genocide that will continue in the West. This is kind of an old hat argument, but a good one, that, if all Catholic Mexicans leave Mexico, then who's going to make Mexico Catholic again? Obviously, we can't have a mass immigration at all, but, there's no common sense argument against, for bringing them here. It's only appeal to a power. The prophetic warning of the Bishop of Mosul. In the summer of 2014, the Archbishop of Mosul, the second largest city in Iraq and the city of martyrs, already warned us, quote, "Our suffering is a prelude to what you yourselves, European and Western Christians, will suffer in the near future. You have to make brave and hard declarations, including going against your principles. If you do not understand this quickly, you will fall at the hands of an enemy that you welcome in your own home," unquote. This is not like a Fed post anyway. I don't think anything short of violence is going to remove all the immigrants from Europe. I don't know if you can pay to deport all these people. I think it's just going to have to be. I don't want to knock the significance of this, but Christ whipping people out of the temple, it doesn't need to be done with anger and rage. It just needs to be sense of justice. These people need to leave, and I don't think they can be bribed to leave. I'm not happy about that. I wish they would just leave on their own volition. I'm only engaging with what I understand of Arabs, and they only understand Arabs and Africans really only stand violence. They don't understand appeals to logic and reason like Europeans and whites do, which is unfortunate. I mean, it's just the way of the world. I'm not encouraging it. I think it's an unfortunate outcome. Since this prophetic warning, the enemy has grown more numerous every day in our homes, although drowned out by this sentimentalism of certain influential prelates, the common sense is that held by the majority within the church. Confusion between migrants and refugees. But we have to admit that the majority of papal statements on this subject are tainted with a sentimentality in a unique way. The victims, quote, the flesh of Christ, unquote, are always the migrants. And the little girl of 7 who was gang raped by illegal migrants in a park, is she not the flesh of Christ? Would we love to hear the Pope talk about that? But his silence is defending. So, I mentioned earlier in the show that Pope Francis, his silence was more damaging than anything else. I have not, as I'm reading this to you, this is the first time I'm engaging with this book and text. I'm really glad that Julian and I can kind of come to a similar perspective. We would love to hear the Pope talk about that. But his silence is deafening. This is his flock that migrants are mistreating and raping the large number. His flock upon whom tombs migrants eat and sleep. Moreover, contrary to what some prelates say to try to diffuse the discomfort about the Pope's statements, he made no distinction at all between migrants and refugees. Controversially, he sows and maintains confusion between the two as if it to insinuate that every case of illegal migrant should be accepted, whereas we know very well that in general there are more than just refugees. There are also economic migrants and terrorists. By definition, an illegal migrant having no papers is indefinable. In front of the TF1's cameras, a group of young people being presented as Syrians hilariously ended up saying, quote, "I am Algerian, sir," unquote. The church has been has seen this before. In his defense, Pope Francis is likely influenced by his personal history. He was born as an Algerian to Italian immigrants. One should also consider that Pope is probably poorly informed. I choose to. There's no way this the age of media, and the age of information, the only way you choose to be informed is if you turn a blind eye to it. Like we all, I would assume a man that is pontiff, that is the vicar of Christ, has the agency to look things up or do research on his own, engage in priors. If not, then I have some deep concerns. So I if anybody of leadership is like, well, I was poorly informed, I'm gonna just call a BS or a bull crap on that. You could have been lied to, and that may have been, but unless people have their own agency, I don't. Unless we're just going to take away agency from all leaders, if they don't have an agency, then why should they are leaders? I'll continue. This wouldn't be the first pope who made some political mistakes based on bad advice. We might recall Pope Pius XI excommunicating Francisc in 1926 prior to lifting the condemnation in 1939 or signing the Arglos, A-R-R-E-G-L-O-S, in 1926 with Mexico, ending the War of the Cristisos without actually ending the anti-Catholic persecutions. But we cannot both brag about the independent mind of the Pope, who has no qualms about chastising the Curia in public. At the same time, imagine him as a hostage to his advisors. Neither can we pretend that the Pope, because he is an Argentinian, does not sufficiently know the crisis in multicultural Europe. He has been in his position since 2003, and we can suppose that he has been well enough informed about the problems caused by the large presence of Muslims in the old continent. Aren't there like, let me look this up, the crime rate in Argentina. And then the Holy Father is certainly cultured enough and historically knowledgeable enough to know what happens when people are not at all alike are forced to live together. All of this is true, and let us remember that the church has known much worse. In 897, Pope Stephen VI put his predecessor Formosa on trial after Formosa had died the previous year. The body was dug up, reclothed in papal vestments, seated on the throne where he was judged. This was called the Cadaver Council, condemnation to death. The three fingers of Formosa's corpse were amputated from the right hand and thrown into the Tiber. Pope Stephen VI was strangled sometime later. In the following century, the Roman aristocrat Theophilist, a council of Rome, had his daughter Marmosi lover elected to Pope. Sergius III, his natural son, succeeded next, John the 11th. He would be succeeded in turn by John the 12th, a grandson of Marmosa. John the 12th either died of apoplexy in the arms of his mistress or was killed by her jealous husband. The 10th century is full of these stories of sex, power struggles, murderous madness around the Holy See from 1378 to 1417, the 4 years the Great Western Schism divided Europe. Some kingdoms followed the Pope of Avignon, others recognized only the Pope in Rome. These are some significant examples of detritus that have been thrown around the papal institution, and yet the dogma of the faith and Christian doctrine were never contested by these popes. There was constant fidelity to divine revelation despite personal corruption. This is proof the church is not only a human institution. The fact is that she has lasted for 2,000 years and is in fact the most ancient institution of Europe is truly miraculous. We're almost done here. A couple more, another page or so. Standing up for the Holy Father. Oh boy, this is. I might have some disagreements with this. Whether the position of the Pope may be, it behooves us to remain cautious, particularly in around troubled times where many attempts to destabilize the Holy Father crop up here and there among the path of life, sexuality, and marriage. There are vital issues for the constitution of a healthy people, such as the able to resist all assaults. When the enemies of the faith harass the Pope, it is the entire church that they attack. This is neither the first nor the last supreme pontiff to suffer a wrath of terroristic of singular vision. Our first task, therefore, is to pray for him in times of nihilism. Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think you, even if you don't believe the next pontiff, you should still pray for the Vicar of Christ as that we may in future have a better pontiff. Or the Holy See, as that we may, that things may heal. You don't need to pray for the pontiff. I think you should, just as you would, like, any, as you should pray for all your leaders in your life, being your boss or your, you know, state representative or local representatives. You should pray for these people, that they make good decisions and that they, hold themselves to the faith and to God, just out of charity building in yourself, regardless if you like them or dislike them. You growing in charity matters more than I would say anything else. But if you know, I don't want to say like anything else, as in like nothing else matters, but like you don't want to lose an opportunity to grow in charity is more or less what I'm saying. Our first task is therefore to pray for him in times of nihilism. While in Europe is the process of dechristianization, we do not have time for proud schismatics to follow a path that leads directly towards heresy. The devil's desire is nothing less than to put at risk for the communication of the church. The devil desires nothing less than put at risk the communion of the church. Facing enemies within and the useful idiots without, we mustn't howl about it. We must not give the pleasure to our enemies, who are always fond of our petty parish quarrels. Let us stand up for our Holy Father. I mean, like I said, praying for somebody that you don't like helps you grow in charity and humility, helps you be more Christ-like. And that's, I guess, really the end goal. At the end, if you really want to be like, this is, how do I get to heaven? We have to act like Christ. And the only way we are is engaging with humility. And all other virtues stem from humility. You know, that might be a contentious point. That, you know, while it might be nice to, like, be in our feelings about hating somebody, or, like, I just beat that guy up, or be mad about somebody. I think, while in reason, in a reasonable sense, we can, but I think it's more important, like, hey, we pray for people, even if we don't like them, or even, like, especially people that anger us or upset us the most. I think that's the best way to grow in spirit. And, you know, the end, like, if getting to heaven matters to you, then we wouldn't want to grow in sport. Like, why would you want, you know, somebody here on earth stopping you from reaching eternal happiness? Just being, you know, I guess that would be probably the best practical way to put it. Getting out of the papal idolatry. Let us put a little distance between ourselves and the words of the Pope. It may be that our disappointment in hearing certain statements comes from the tendency to adulterize the papal function. I've noticed a lot of these issues come from, like, Protestant converts, not understanding the role of the Pope, or like, hey, you can, like, the Pope's also a human being. He's not like this, he's not Christ. He's supposed to act like Christ, but he's also a man. He's not God. So you can criticize him when his makes bad arguments or makes bad ploys. Pope spiders, I think, are off base with Francis and John Paul and Benedict. I mean, they're still liberals. I don't know if we could ever elect, if we'll see a non-liberal pope in our lifetimes, to be generally. We can see in the next couple days when this gets released. We're still in early May. Before the conclave starts on the 7th, and we're I'm recording this a couple days before. So we'll see. But I don't think we'll ever see a not political pope. And you're only going to tie yourself in knots defending a guy who's a liberal, or defending a man who goes against the fundamentals of the church politically. We will return that from which we have adored. There is only one step from the pedestal to the stake. Doing mental backflips to save the position of pope is a very subtle form of adultery. Although well-intended, this approach is least productive. The pope says this and that and everything in between. It's never-ending debate. If you have to do exegesis on the papal statements to understand them or to find some positive element in them, it's because those statements were too confusing to begin with. Therefore, the best way to save the position of the pope is to refrain from commenting on it. A systematic analysis, especially when it is public, makes us fall into the dangerous logic of too much media. The papal word already undergoes a hyper scrutiny because of the many means of communication available. The Holy Father, it is unnecessary to add to it, because of the many means of communication available to the Holy Father, it is unnecessary to add to it. Moreover, as we are accustomed to living in a consumerist environment where we have everything in a split second, we struggle to restrain ourselves and our desires to protest when we aren't satisfied. This is why we like picky judges, examine the slightest slip that might justify our harsh criticisms, encouraged by the surrounding spirit of democracy to cry from the rooftops, pouring out over our souls. We're just falling to the unproductive habit of becoming snarky. We do everything from the duty of truth. We'll do it. We'll do anything for the duty of truth. But who made us judges of everything? Idolatry and proud criticism are two sides of the same coin. The opportunity to strengthen our faith and consolidate our unity. It may be that the political inadequacies of the pope are an opportunity for the Lord to test our faith in the word of Christ. Quote, "You are Peter, and this is the rock I build upon my church, and the gates of hell shall never prevail against it," unquote. Matthew 16:18. I mean, that's a good point too. But God makes it clear. I think the book of Judges itself talks about how just faithless people get bad leaders. Like, I'm going to keep bringing this. I mean, I don't know if I brought this up before. I know we're saying old things. I'm saying old things. But I think it's an extremely important point that the only way we're going to change the future is if we put butt in pews and knees on kneelers. I think that's there's no political solution other than, you know, returning to the faith. The Pope is our father, and we are his children. In every family, you can find things to criticize, but we need to move beyond the unhealthy stage of resentment. Criticism is possible as long as it's done in respect and doesn't try to hustle up the whole world as witness. But Christ warns us, quote, "Every kingdom divided against itself is laid to waste, and no city or house divided against thyself will stand." Matthew 12:25. Let us also not forget that our duty as Christians, after loving God, is to love and protect our own. Our 2,000-year-old church is in her immense wisdom has not betrayed us. Let us keep faith and ensure that our country is to the protection of the Virgin Mary and Christ the King, and let us fight. And that ends chapter 3. I will continue next week. We're going to have a real good interview coming out too. Please stay tuned for that. We're still tackling some Polish errors and some of the Holocaust worship. So please look forward to that, and I will see you guys when I see you guys. Any comments, questions, or concerns, please email us at fppodcastcontact@gmail.com. The rest of our contact will be in the show notes. Thank you, guys.